Tomorrow, by Hare Krishna Call. As the boys went into their classrooms, after the prayers, Sula of Class IV said to Makhana, "Learned the multiplication table set by Nilekant, have you tried to, but just can't memorize the damn things? What shall we do? Lord Yama's own messenger he is." Makhana's face turned pale. Sula laughed carelessly and handed something to him quietly. "Here, rub it on your hands." "What is it?" "Sheep's fat." "Go on, apply it on your hand, then the caning will not hurt, swear by your father." Makhana was rather incredulous. "May my father die if I am not telling the truth. Look, I am also applying it on my hands." The two friends went on quietly applying the fat on their palms through the first four periods and the recess. Nilekant's period came after the recess. As soon as he entered the classroom, he took off his turban and placed it on the broken down shell of a cupboard. Then he sat down, unbuttoned his coat and shirt, and began to scratch his hairy chest, spreading out his legs. He farted while asking the boys to recite the multiplication tables. After six boys, came Makhana's turn. He did all right initially, but then befaltered. Nilekant grabbed his ear and, pulling him, dragged him towards himself. Makhana stole a glance at his hands. They were glistening with fat, but Nilekant did not cane him. He surveyed the class, and his eye fell on Sula, who appeared to be the most well-built and tough, and he said, "Hey you, Sula Fatso. Come here, give this Makhana a ride on your back." Sula had been quietly trying to memorize his tables. Hearing the order, he folded his book and put it back in the bundle on the piece of cloth in which he carried them. He stood up and, glancing at Makhana, gave a chuckle and lifted him on his back. Nilekant pulled up Makhana's shirt and began to cane the tender flesh with a thin stick. Makhana screamed, "Oh father dear, oh mother mine, I'm dead. Sir, I'll memorize it tomorrow, I promise I will. Oh my father, I'm dead, sir, must err he, please spare me today, sir. May God send all your misfortunes upon me, sir, must err he, may I die instead of you, must err he. Tomorrow I'll have everything by heart, you will see, sir." "Are you telling the truth?" Nilekant asked. "The truth, sir. If I don't have them at the tip of my tongue tomorrow, please skin me alive. In that case, let's leave him." Nilekant told Sula, and then fumed to the class, "Will all of you have learned the tables, don't know, 16 tomorrow?" "Yes, sir." Everyone yelled Sula the loudest. "All those who did not know them today will now touch their earlobes in shame." Half a dozen boys did so, and Makhana, before everyone else. At 4 p.m., the two friends left school to walk home together. Just as Sula began to say something, Makhana snapped at him, "Shut up, you. I've seen your friendship very well. How did we carry you on our back of our own wish? We only did what Master he asked us to do." "Rogue, showing off the sheep's fat indeed. How was I to know that he would hit your bottom? You should have applied the fat on your buttocks, then it would not have hurt." "Keep your mouth shut or I'll break all your teeth." They had reached the main road, and standing there was the convent school bus. The children were alighting while their mothers waited for them. The boys and girls were in uniform: white shirts, red neckties, red socks, black shoes, and green shorts or skirts. They all carried little lunch boxes. Something happened to Makhana. He kept staring at a blue-eyed little girl. Sula was watching a little boy with hair like silk and milk-white legs. It appeared that the little boy had not eaten his lunch because his mother was telling him, "But why didn't you tell me that you do not like coffee? I would have given you some mutton or a couple of eggs." "There were some pieces of fish left over from yesterday's curry. You could have had those. But why did you have to starve yourself?" The boy only smiled in return. Suddenly a thought came to Sula, and he asked, "What did they cook in your home today?" "Two kinds of greens." "Just as wretched as I thought." Perhaps Makhana did not hear him. He was wondering, who could the blue-eyed one be? Whose child was she? The next day, when the bell rang and all the boys assembled in the compound for prayers, Sula happened to look back. He turned deathly pale. He saw his father talking to the headmaster outside the school gate. His instinct was to dash out, but the peon stood at the gate menacingly. The lump of fat still lay in his pocket. He had not yet used it on his hands. After a while, the headmaster returned, and the peon shut the gate. Sula of Class Ivy will step out, the headmaster ordered. Sula's knees trembled as he moved forward. Do you know what this fellow Sula was doing at home yesterday? The headmaster addressed the boys, swinging his cane. No, sir, the boys shouted at the top of their voices. A regular riot he has created at home last evening. Broken the pots and pans and bitten his mother's thumb, and do you know why? No, sir, he told his parents that he wanted hot rice and curry, hot rice and curry, ha ha ha, all the boys laughed. Should he have asked for these things? No, sir, if they give you cold rice, that is what you should eat. If they give you greens, that is what you must eat. If they give you nothing, you must keep quiet, isn't that so? Yes, sir, the headmaster proceeded to cane Sula a dozen times on each hand, and finally asked the Malvi Saheb to bite his left thumb. Sula bore the pain of the beating somehow, but the bite drew a shriek from him and he fell down in a heap. Two hard kicks from the headmaster sent him back to his place in the line. The prayers began. Two boys from Class Vijay Dhamad and Ashok Kumar stepped forward and started to sing a new Urdu. Lab pay atihidua bank tamana meri, zindagi shams ka surat hok udaya meri. This wish comes as a prayer upon my lips, O Lord, make my life like that of the candle. The rest of the boys repeated the words after them as loudly as they could. Sula, his voice choked with sobs, sang through his tears. Dorduna yakamir dum say and harahohai, har jagamir cham and say you jalahohai, may the darkness of the world be dispelled through me, may there be light everywhere that I shine. The prayers over, the boys went to their respective classes. Seeing Sula's small, reddened eyes, Makhana's heart softened towards him and all of yesterday's anger was washed away. What, if his own father were alive today, he would also have been coming to school sometimes to have him thrashed. Good, that he had only a mother, she beat him, no doubt, but would not come to the school with a complaint. But the very next moment he remembered Nilekant, and he also remembered that he had still not memorized the tables, asking Sula, for the fat did not seem quite tight. Besides, he had no faith in it any more. The problem exercised his mind, but eventually he thought his own remedy the best. He took the goddess Kali's name 7 times and tied a knot in his shirt. After the recess, Nilekant entered the classroom. As usual, he took off his turban and put it on the broken-down cupboard, slipped his feet out of his pumps, and sat cross-legged in his chair, scratching his head. He asked the boys to recite the tables one by one. While the first boy was doing so, Makhana suddenly stood up. What thunderbolt has hit you now? Makhana lifted his little finger. Pass, sir, oh pass indeed, sit down at once or I'll thrash you. Makhana sat down, but, after a few minutes stood up again. Sir, Mastaji, I'm bursting, terrible pass, sir, no mischief before me, or I'll draw it out through your bottom. Sir, I'm telling the truth, Masterhi, it is the big pass, sir. Nilekant looked Makhana square in the face. Makhana's eyes seemed to glitter with tears. He thought that he was telling the truth, and so let him go. Once, in the toilet, Makhana began to think there certainly was something in the business of tying a knot in your shirt, or why else would he get the urge for the big pass all of a sudden? Hadn't he already relieved himself at home, in the morning? Actually, the great Kali is not the one to leave her devotee in a tight situation. By the time he went back to the classroom, Nilekant's period would be over. The last bell rang at 4 p.m. Sula and Makhana left to go home. Reaching the main road, Sula would have continued to walk on, but Makhana stopped him with, wait, let's stop for the convent bus. To hell with it, we only get a beating later on. Makhana was quiet. Sula took his arm and pulled him along, but Makhana's feet refused to budge. Eventually Sula left on his own. He had taken only a couple of steps when he saw a few people gambling. He stopped to watch the game. After a few minutes the convent bus came, and out trotted the children in their shorts/shirts/socks/shoes/ties. After 5 or 6 children came the blue-eyed girl, handing over the lunchbox and add a showcase of books to her mother. She tightened her skirt belt. Mackenna's heart pounded against his ribs, as if the headmaster had made him do 8 runs of the schoolyard. As he was looking at her, she disappeared with her mother in the hallway's alley. The next day, school went well till the recess, when suddenly the cry went round that 2 boys had drowned while bathing in the river near Habacaddle. The bell at the end of the recess was rung late, and the teachers had all the boys assemble in the compound and fall in line just as they did for prayers. After a while, the headmaster came and delivered a lecture. The boys must not go to the ghat to bathe in the veth, because the river was infested with crocodiles. The crocodile is a riverine animal and resembles a lizard, but is much bigger in size, and as soon as a boy enters the veth, its jaws close on his legs and he is dragged down. From the word crocodile came the phrase, crocodile tears. Meanwhile, the second master came and proceeded to put the stamp of the school on every boy's thigh. While the headmaster spoke on, the school stamp is being put on your thighs so that every morning we can examine it, and if it is found missing or washed away from anyone's skin, he will be given a thrashing with stinging nettles. When the second master was through with the task of stamping, the school was declared closed for the day. As they were going home, Mackenna said to Sula, "Supposing we tell them that we had to bath under the tap, how can they tell? Stupid, do you think they are fools? Don't they know there is no water in the taps? What wisdom will you show them then?" Mackenna pulled his shorts up and said, "Look, how well this brand of a sleeve suits us. Aren't the legs of goats hanging at the butcher's shop stamped similarly?" Reaching the main road, Mackenna stopped, saying, "Today we were saved from Nilekanth the crocodile's period." "Oh yes, did he ask you your tables?" "No, I too was saved by the skin of my teeth." "Swear." "By your father." "By my father's death I swear." "How did you manage it?" "He asked me to press his head." For a while they were silent, and then Mackenna spoke, "The bus has not come today." "How can it come yet?" "Weren't we let off early?" "Come, let's go. Let's wait, shall we?" "No, tomorrow the crocodile will certainly demand the tables." Mackenna had developed a certain faith in the efficacy of the shirt knot, so he replied carelessly, "Oh, come on, tomorrow is a long way off." Tomorrow Karnand went, and so it went on for a long time. The form master was supposed to check the boys before the prayers every morning, and he asked them to show him the stamp. It had gone in several cases, and on some only a faint mark remained, but it was still fresh on Mackenna's and Sula's thighs, as if newly made. There were welts of grime around the mark, throwing it into greater relief. The form master understood that these two had followed the headmaster's order to the letter. While the others had had an occasional dip, he was very pleased with them, and letting them off, asked both of them to go to his house, where a carpenter was at work. Sula and Mackenna went off enthusiastically. They were to keep handing the material, frames, planks, and nails, to the carpenter as he worked, fill water in his hookah, tobacco, in the chillum, place a live charcoal from the Kangri on it, and take puffs till the tobacco was properly lit. Carrying beams, Mackenna's shirt got torn. Sula had been wise. He had taken his off and worked in his shorts. At about 4 p.m., the two picked up their bundles of books and left to go home. At the main road, Mackenna's feet automatically came to a halt. Sula gave a chuckle and stopped too. After a while, the convent bus came and the children descended. Today they were in their winter uniforms: black shoes, red socks, gray flannel trousers, gray sweaters, white shirts, red ties, and dark cherry blazers. On their top left coat pockets was the school badge. Mackenna strained his eyes but could not locate the blue-eyed girl. "Come on, let's go. It is late, and I am cold." Mackenna seemed to wake up at Sula's remark. He too was feeling cold, and the two turned homewards. After a month or so, the school closed for the winter vacation. When it reopened, there was still some snow around. Before the bell rang, the boys played and had snow fights. Sula and Mackenna buried a number of boys in the snow and thrust snowballs through the shirt fronts of several others. Then they made 3 snowmen, resembling the headmaster, Nilekanth, and the Malvi Saheb. In the bustle of the game, they came into their own and seemed to realize their worth for the first time. Hardly anyone escaped their attention. The high point of the morning was their dragging Ashok Kumar and Jave Dhamid of Class V on the snow. This thrilled them with an animal pleasure. Their happiness lasted till the fourth period. For the first two periods no one turned up to teach them. The third was Malvi Sahib's. He demanded walnuts from the Shivratri festivities from the Pundit boys and forgot to check the work assigned for the long winter vacation. But the second master, in the fourth period, demanded work. The pallor of death spread on the faces of several boys. Makhani quickly tied a knot in his shirt. Sula did not have the lump of fat with him. He looked appealingly at the second master, who made all the boys, including him and Makhana, who had not done the winter assignment, stand up. Then he beat the stovepipe's wish stick, and collecting the accumulated soot, smeared their faces with it. The monitor was ordered to take them round all the classes. Makhana heaved a sigh of relief at having escaped a beating. Now he was fully convinced of the secret power of the shirt knot. As they went down the stairs, he told Sula, "Saw a film with my cousin on Shivratri. There was a black giant, and it just like you. You should see your own face. You look like the devil himself." Led by the monitor, they came to Class V first of all. Seeing them, the boys and the teacher burst into laughter, in which they also joined in sheepishly. Their next stop was Class IV, which was betaled by an Alakant, who boxed their ears. A few boys started to laugh, but Sula gave them such a malevolent look that the smiles froze on their lips. After this, the monitor took them to Class I, which was being taught by the Malvi Sahib. At that time, he showered blows on some and obscenities on others. While giving Makhana a hard blow, he admonished him, "Don't you dare forget to get the Shivratri walnuts tomorrow." In the upper first, Makhana quietly pinched the arm of the black giant next to him, and a cry escaped him, at which the master gave him several hard slaps. In the lower first, Sula upset about a loving belonging to child sitting in the front row, but the child was too scared of him to even utter a whimper of protest. When they were back in their class, after the round, the second master made them catch their earlobes to express shame, and with firm instructions to get their work with them tomorrow without fail, dismiss them. Tomorrow went by, then another tomorrow, and so it went on for the next 5 years. The name of the school was changed. It became the Government Lower Middle School, but it still had only 5 classes, and Sula and Makhana still remained in Class IV. The warm autumn sun was very pleasant, and these two had been put to work by the Malvi Sahib. Sula was scratching his back and haunches with his nails. Makhana was squeezing out the pus from the boils on his thighs. The Malvi Sahib's eyes were half closed with relief. The other boys were engaged in games of knots and cross play on slates. The monitor stood at the door on the lookout for the headmaster. This was the last period, and they were let off after this. Makhana bought a cigarette for 1 paisa from the shop outside the school, and the two friends took rums taking puffs from it. "Come on, hurry, let's leave the books at home and play with marbles," Sula said. "No. Let's finish the cigarette first. On the main road someone might see us smoking." "That's a lie, you rogue. If your father were alive, you would make him fill tobacco in your chilim, I'm certain." "I know what's bugging you. You think it is too early for her to come." Makhana just grinned, finishing the cigarette. They walked to the main road. The convent bus had arrived. The children descended and then left with their mothers. The bus left, but Makhana and Sula remained. Makhana asked Sula to buy 2 paisa worth of roasted soybeans. "There she comes." Sula's exclamation made Makhana forget to munch. His heart beat faster as he stared at her unblinkingly. Reaching the Hawes shop, she dismounted her bicycle. Her attaché case of books was on its carrier, and in her hand she carried a hockey stick. She wore white socks and PT shoes. Her white skirt hemline reached just above her knees. Over her white shirt, she wore a red nylon cardigan. Her hair fell over her shoulders. "How she has grown. How different she looks." Sula nudged Makhana. "Only her eyes are the same, as blue as ever." Makhana drew a deep sigh. "What a little girl she used to be." "How little?" "Just as little as we used to be. But they say she is to appear for her matriculation this year." "Swear on your father." Sula seemed to jump out of his skin. "May my father die if I tell a lie." Makhana swore. This is what 'tis called luck. They say she is the captain of the school hockey team too. Suddenly Sula thought of something. He asked, "Hey Allison, didn't they take 4 annas from each of us for sports equipment last month? What did they do with the money? Just look where this chap has gone." McHannah was furious. "I'm talking of something serious, and he is off on a totally different track. After all, what can one expect from him?" Next year the name of the school changed again. Now it was the Nehru Memorial Government Lower Middle School. Sula asked McHannah, "What does this Nehru Memorial mean?" "Nehruji is dead. That is why our school has been named after him," McHannah answered his question. "Oh, that I understood very well. But what does memorial mean?" "How the devil should I know? To me it sounds like an obscenity." "What the hell is the matter with you?" McHannah lost his temper. "I'll report you to the headmaster. Tell him that this fellow is abusing the leader of the Kashmiri Pundits." "Oh ho, did I abuse him on my own? They themselves have given this obscene name to the school? How does that bother you? You just keep your mouth shut." After the prayers, the headmaster made an announcement. The Malvi Saheb was retiring from service that day. He would not be coming to school the next day. Then he spoke at length of his competence and gentle qualities. The boys understood nothing of it. The headmaster then made a request for the Malvi Saheb to say a few words of advice to the boys, at which he stepped forward and began, but broke down after just a few words. Taking a piece of cloth from his sherwani pocket, he wiped his tears. Placing the same cloth on his nose, he blew hard and drew the snot on it, and rubbing the cloth between his fingers till it was absorbed, folded it afresh and put it back in his pocket. While climbing the stairs of the class, McHannah asked Sula, "Hey, why did the Malvi Saheb weep? Shouldn't he weep? The poor man must be feeling bad about leaving his job." Sula said, "Couldn't it be that he was sorry about beating us so much? Maybe that is why. Who knows? Anyway, good riddance. God has delivered us from him. Oh, but will he, who comes to replace him, be any better for us? All these bastards are the same." Malvi Saheb came to class IV, as usual in his period. He was eloquent. "My dear boys, you will be very happy to see me gone. You must have a lot of resentment against me because I used to beat you. But remember, a teacher's beating is not a beating. It is like being given food and nourishment, and this stick is not a stick, it is a giver of wisdom. I had no hatred for you, rather there was love for you all in my heart. That is why I like to drill sense into you with this, my symbol of wisdom." The boys listened in silence. He went on, and finally concluded with, "All right, now one shall hit each one of you on the hand with this stick for the last time, so that you will always remember my love for you." The Malvi Saheb retired, but there was no immediate replacement for him. The next day, the headmaster himself took their class. As his glance fell on Sula, he seemed to remember something. "Hey, you there, what's your name?"
"Sula, sir."
"All right, Sula, get up and go to my house. Do you know where I live?"
"Yes, sir."
"Very well. Now listen, our servant went home to his village yesterday. Why don't you go and take our cow out, lead her to some garden?" Sula rose with alacrity and asked, "Sir, shall I leave my books here or take them along?"
"No, no, take the books with you. At 4 o'clock you can go home from there. But wait, take someone with you."
"I can take McHannah with me, sir."
"And who may McHannah be?"
"Me,
sir."
McHannah rose with a grin. "Ah, that's very good. Run along then, both of you." The two picked up their load of books and left. They went to the headmaster's residence and drove the cow out, leading it to a distant field. The cow began to graze, her mouth clinging to the green grass, while the two started playing hopscotch.
"Hey, did you see how fat the headmaster's wife is? Shouldn't she grow fat? With a cow at home, she must be drinking milk by the bucket every day. They said the servant would be back after 4 days.
Well, why should we mind? That is 4 days well taken care of. And if they ask us to write a composition on cow in the examination, just think of it. Oh yes, look, this cow really has 2 cars, 2 eyes, 4 legs, and 1 tail. Don't they also write 'a cow chews good'? What does that mean? Maybe it is something to do with dung. Forget it. Besides, if the headmaster is pleased with us, he will certainly pass us, composition or no composition," said McHannah.
Tomorrow I'll get the marbles with me. There's no fun in this hop. Scotch. Aha, that'll be fun. Mac Hanna jumped with joy and anticipation. On the fourth day, while playing with marbles, a sigh escaped Mac Hanna, and he said, "The headmaster's wife said their servant would be returning from the village today. That means we shall have to attend school tomorrow." Sula's knees became wobbly with dismay. "But let us loaf tomorrow too. We shall tell them at home that we have to take the headmaster's cow out again." "By father, now you are talking sense." Mac Hanna's spirits soared, and he shouted, "Here, that's my turn." Tomorrow came and went, and so it went on for another 5 years. It was the 14th of November, Jawaharlal Nehru's birthday, Children's Day. Sula, Mac Hanna, and all the other boys of the Nehru Memorial Government Lower Middle School were taken to the stadium by the masters. The huge stadium gate had been decorated with arches of flowers and bunting. Many cars and jeeps lined both sides of the road, which was sprinkled with water and lined with lime. Policemen moved around busily in their crisp, freshly laundered uniforms. The boys from the Nehru Memorial Government Lower Middle School were not allowed to enter from the impressive front gate. They were asked to come from the gate at the back. Sula and Mac Hanna were dumbstruck at the sight inside. There were flags all around, red, blue, yellow, green, pink, purple, fluttering in the wind. On one side in chairs sat men in expensive suits and women in bright colored dresses. In front of them in neat rows stood boys and girls from different schools in their distinctive, attractive uniforms. At the other end stood the band in dazzling attire. Their drums and bugles shone brilliantly in the sun. Sula, Mac Hanna, and several other boys were made to sit in a corner at the back, far away from the color and pageantry. They tried to sneak ahead quietly, but a master happened to notice and, swinging his thin mulberry stick, pushed them back. But Mac Hanna kept rising on his haunches to catch a glimpse of the show, while Sula was happily engaged in a game of pebbles with another boy. Suddenly all the people in chairs stood up. Someone announced something through a megaphone, and the uniformed boys and girls stiffened to attention. Someone dressed in pure white arrived, smiling, with folded hands. He bowed before everyone and took his seat on the sofa in the front. Sula quietly threw a pebble at Mac Hanna. "Now which bastard's father is dead?" Mac Hanna was enraged. "Nobody's. It is I who threw it at you," Sula explained. "I say, who is that? Must be someone. Who knows? Is he the one who will give away the pears? Who said anything about pears being given away?" "Nalekant was saying that we would each be given two pears over here." "Swear by your father?" Mac Hanna was pleased. "By father, I swear." The man in white went to the rostrum and unfurled the flag. Everyone stood up. The children saluted, and so did the band. The people took their seats again. The man in white began to say something. "What is he saying?" Mac Hanna asked Sula. "Who the hell understands anything?" was Sula's reply. After his speech, the man went back to his seat on the sofa. The people clapped, watching them. Sula, Mac Hanna, and the others also clapped loudly. A little girl climbed up on the rostrum and sang a song. She was also cheered. Mac Hanna and Sula too applauded. Then came four or five boys, who also said something and received loud cheers. "Oh, I'm feeling tired with all this clapping," said Sula. "You get tired too easily," Mac Hanna snapped at him. "These poor fellows are not tired with all this lecturing, and you are exhausted merely with clapping." Next came a group of girls, who performed the Roth. Then there was a mass drill by the uniformed children. At the end it was once again the man in white's turn. He climbed the rostrum again and began to give away the prizes to the boys and girls. Every recipient of a prize was cheered lustily. "Hey, when will they give the pears?" Sula asked. "How should I know? Maybe they give, or maybe not," was Mac Hanna's reply. "Oh, but why won't they? When they could give prizes to these guys, why should they faint when it is our turn?" "Obsessed with your stomach, as usual. One would think you were starving." "By God, I have eaten nothing this morning." "Why, didn't you have tea when I left home?" "They had not made it yet." "Okay, be quiet. Look, another girl has received a prize. Clap for her, will you? She won't find me wanting. Ready to die for her." Sula clapped loudly. At 11 o'clock the whole show was over. Sula and McKenna walked out and stood outside the stadium gate. While the vehicles moved out, the two friends counted, taking bites from a pair. 47, 48, 49, 50, 51. To hell with it, what will we get with all this counting? It is just giving us a headache. Say, are there so many cars and jeeps in the city, you think there are only these, there must be four times as many, swear, by your father's death, by my father's death I swear, to hell with them all. Didn't you say they would give us two pairs each? Why have they given us only one? How should I know? Maybe half the pairs were carted home by the masters. Hey, look, did you see the people in that car? McKenna almost screamed. No, who was it? Sula asked. That same blue-eyed one. Perhaps she had brought her daughter here in the car. Did she have her husband with her too? Oh yes, was he the one who used to have hair like silk and milk-white legs? Sula sighed. Oh yes, the very same. How they have grown, shouldn't they have grown? They have a child too. Shouldn't they have had? It must be 22 or 23 years since then. 23 years, certainly that. It is an age ago. Swear by your father, I swear by my father. Why didn't we grow up? How do I know? How can I say anything? Do we have to go to school tomorrow? McKenna asked after a while. What do you think? They have given you a holiday today. You expect them go give you one tomorrow too. I just wondered if they might indeed, they, who would not even give us two pairs. So, there is no getting away from school tomorrow, McKenna sighed. The next day, as the boys started to go to their classes, after the prayers, Sula of Class Ivy said to McKenna, learned the multiplication table set by Nilekant, have you? No, you have tried to, but just can't memorize the damn things. Now, what shall we do? Lord Yama's own messenger he is. McKenna's face turned pale. Sula laughed carelessly and handed something to him stealthily. Hero, rub it on your hands, then the caning will not hurt. Swear by your father. McKenna was somewhat incredulous. May my father die if it isn't the truth. Look, I am also applying it on my hands.